All right, let's do our lesson review. Lesson 6, Esau and Jacob. Isaac and Rebekah began their life together in faithful obedience to God and to Abraham. Before his sons were born, God told Isaac and Rebekah that the blessing was to go to the younger son. Some people miss that with all the machinations and the trickster deception that goes on later. They miss the point that God had already said, this is how it's going to be. And no need for tricks, no need for deceit, no need for games. Just obey God. Just tell Esau, this isn't on the sheet, by the way, if you're looking for this. Just tell Esau, this is the way it's going to be. God said, this is the way it's going to be. And stand there, but that's not what happened. But the younger son had already been announced as the one who would receive the blessing. Rebekah and Jacob conspired to deceive Isaac into giving the blessing to Jacob instead of Esau. They conveyed the wealth of the family and the blessing of God onto Jacob. Jacob journeyed toward Haran and stopped first at Bethel, that means the house of God, and about 3 days journey, from his home, 3 days journey from his home. God promised to make Jacob and his descendants would be numberless. Notice that God is still keeping his covenant with Jacob, even though Jacob has disobeyed and been part of this scam. God's word remains true. God's still going to make Jacob the heir of the Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob covenant. Paul told Timothy, if we're unfaithful, remember this, God still remains faithful. That's our assurance. The trickster had been tricked. The man who deceived his father had been deceived. I've read this many times, but it really, I think this author brought it home closer to my mind, that the very kind of deceit that Jacob and his mother pulled on his father, costume, pretend to be somebody else, that's exactly what happened to Jacob. Now, we know that was part of God's providence and this family. My lesson today is Leah and Rachel, but it's the trickster is a trick. And you can imagine the protest when he said, I was misled. I didn't know who that was. And boy, that's exactly what Isaac could have said. It's like, you deceived me with this garment you wore. And I think the author did a good job of bringing out that full circle. Alright, her firstborn son was Reuben, and she went on to become the mother of four other sons. Sin cast long shadows that reach across generations and affect the lives of many innocent people. God blessed Jacob, but at the same time, Jacob suffered for the sins he committed. All right, beginning of Israel, we're looking at chapters 12 through 50. God is raising up the nation of Israel. Joseph will eventually bring his family to Egypt, and there will be about 70. And so the book of Genesis will end with a fairly small family, but the book of Exodus will open with the family. The sons of Jacob will have grown into a nation, albeit a slave nation. They will have grown into a nation of maybe 2.5 million people. So there's a lot of things that happen between the end of Genesis and the beginning of Exodus. But part of that lineage is this family tree that includes Rachel and Leah. At about this time, you really need a scorecard going forward in Genesis, if not to be indelicate or to make light of the concubinage and the immorality that God permits and yet still blesses and overrules it. You think, how could God bless an evil thing and make something good come out of it? Well, you don't have to look any further than the cross. Wicked men crucified Jesus and murdered Jesus, but God overruled that sovereignly to make him the salvation of sinners. So men do wicked things, God permits it, and God's providence incorporates it in a way that we can't do that. We're not omniscient, we're not omnipotent. When we try to do that, we only make it worse. But if you look at the family tree here with Abraham and Sarah and the lineage of Isaac and Rebecca, pretty simple. Abraham and Sarah have one son of promise. They have, of course, there's Ishmael, but one son of promise. Abraham has other sons, but the Bible focuses on Isaac. Isaac marries Rebecca. We saw that in a lesson. And then they have two sons, Esau and Jacob. And then the children of Israel, because Jacob, his name gets changed from trickster or heel grabber or supplanter. His name gets changed to Israel, which means prince of God or prince with God. Jacob marries Leah and also Rachel, and his two wives, which is not God's perfect plan. God's perfect plan is one man, one woman, one lifetime, but he has two wives. And then they also conspire to have him father children through their handmaidens, Zilpah and Bilhah. And so if you keep track of the 12 sons, we have Dinah on here, they have a daughter, which figures in a terrible episode later on in the book of Genesis, but you have the 12 sons. And this little chart numbers the sons. Leah has four sons, Reuben, Simeon, Levi, and Judah. Judah is very important because that's the kingly line. No matter that Benjamin and Joseph were Rachel's children, the godly line of Christ comes through Judah, the tribe of Judah. Kind of that's David's tribe, and Jesus Christ of Nazareth comes through Judah, that fourth son. Then the soap opera turns, and Rachel has Jacob fathered two children by Bilhah. That's 5 and 6, Dan and Naphtali. Well, Leah retaliates, and her handmaid bears Jacob Gad and Asher. Then Leah has two more sons and a daughter. And finally, Rachel has two sons, two famous sons. Joseph, Jacob's favorite. Joseph, who goes from the pit to the pinnacle in his life. He goes from sold as a slave to the vice premier of Egypt. And then the last child of Jacob's family, Benjamin, the left-hander, the tribe of Benjamin. And Rachel actually dies in childbirth with Benjamin. So this little chart is not my chart. I don't know who did this chart. It's pretty simple. This is what you need going forward, remembering all these sons and the daughter, and Joseph and Benjamin's special relationship to Jacob, because apparently Rachel was always his his favorite wife, although you'll see that Leah was much more blessed of God with children, but that's the 12 tribes. Each of those sons, Reuben through Benjamin, becomes a tribe. Actually, Joseph becomes a double portion. His sons, Manasseh and Ephraim, actually are elevated to equal status with Joseph's brothers. So these are the children of Israel, literally. And that grows into to a nation. So I thought that was kind of a helpful chart. You could do that very simple, reading the text and diagramming this. But our key verse today is verse 27 of chapter 30. Laban, that's Jacob's father-in-law. Laban said unto him, I pray thee, if I have found favor in thine eyes, tarry, for I have learned by experience that the Lord has blessed me for thy sake. One of the biblical principles of the Old Testament, I still think it's true in the New Testament era as well. God blesses those who bless Israel. That was true of the person of Israel. Now, Israel didn't always deserve the blessing, didn't always deserve the grace. You never deserve grace. You don't deserve unmerited favor. But God blessed Israel, Jacob personally, and then his sons. And God has a principle of blessing those who bless Israel. That's Israel is the apple of his eyes. So those nations or individuals that bless Israel, God blesses them. One of the reasons God has blessed the United States is because we have blessed the modern state of Israel. Sometimes there's no other explanation for why God has been merciful to us, gracious to us, other than the fact that we have stood by the modern nation of Israel, both politically, on the world stage. Many times the United States is the only friend. Now, I noticed that many nations are willing to accept Israeli help, whether it's medical or aid. And President Trump negotiated some peace treaties between the modern state of Israel and some of the Arab states. An extraordinary thing that's happened. It's been overshadowed by everything else, but there is now a peace treaty with Egypt and also with, is it the United Arab Emirates, one of them, or a couple of the Gulf states. And what nations learn is that those who bless Israel, God has blessed. If you look at the nations that have persecuted Israel in modern times, they have had some very difficult times. You say, well, America also, we've had some very difficult times, but not the economic disaster that the Soviet Union experienced. Now, there are many reasons why the Soviet Union collapsed, why the Iron Curtain fell, but I think one of the reasons why the Soviet Union collapsed, as we know it, is because it was the arch enemy of Israel. And look at Syria, one of the most intense enemies of Israel. That nation has known nothing but catastrophic upheaval and civil war. And the nation of Iran, maybe you've heard of Iran, they have been one of the most hated enemies of Israel. And their modern history since the Shah, no defense of the Shah, but their modern history has just been one tumultuous economic disaster. The people live in abject poverty. The nation has not prospered despite having great resources. Now, that's not coincidence. The nations that bless Israel, God blesses them. So Laban's learned that. He's observant. He sees Jacob's got a blessing on him. And the Lord has blessed Laban for Jacob's sake. Lesson application, the student will conclude that God is always leading him when he follows God. And when he follows God, he will be a blessing to others. We have jealousy in Jacob's family, verses 1 through 13. Jacob's desire to go home, verses 25 through 27. And then we are introduced to the Prince of God. Jacob's name is changed to Israel. When Rachel saw that she bare Jacob no children, Rachel envied her sister and said unto Jacob, "Give me children or else I die." Jacob's anger was kindled against Rachel, and he said, "Am I in God's stead who hath withheld from thee the fruit of the woman?" And she said, "Behold my maid Bilhah, go in unto her, and she shall bear upon my knees, that I may also have children by her." So they concoct this surrogacy. It's a violation of God's perfect plan for marriage, but then again, the marriage to Leah and Rachel contradicted God's perfect will as well. Unless we presume and say, well, it had to happen that way, or there wouldn't have been these 12. We had to have 12, and they had to have these tribes. We're not omniscient. We don't know what it would have been like if Jacob had obeyed God. Very little chance of learning what happens when Jacob obeyed God, because that was not his default mode. That's not the way Jacob did things. But if we say, well, he had to marry Leah, he had to marry Rachel. Didn't have to do that. Those were choices that Jacob made. And God has a way of accomplishing his sovereign will. And we can never excuse our sin by saying, well, I had to sin so God could make something good come of it. No, that is a... Paul says, God forbid that we would say such a thing. Now, when we have back and we think, well, I don't see how it could have been any other way. How could there have been, how could Jacob have gotten the blessing and the birthright without all that scheming? How could Jacob have fathered all these children without violating God's perfect will? One writer pointed this out, and I hope this doesn't sound too pragmatic. But suppose Jacob married Leah, accepted that, and then Leah passes away. You say, well, now you're wishing Leah dead. Now, I'm just saying, Jacob could then have married Rachel, and there would have been no... You see how that could have worked? I mean, even I figured that out. It's like, it could have worked out this way, and Jacob was not violating, but he did a different way. And Jacob's anger with Rachel does not extend to righteousness. He participates in the plan just like his grandfather Abraham had done as well. I'm not blaming Abraham, but you know your example does count. There's back, Jim. I wonder if that's the same bird. And we go on. You read this passage, and one of the fine prints of the Bible is the Bible doesn't pull any punches. It tells us men are sinners, women are sinners, and we are introduced to some very graphic and very disturbing life choices. These names, the Hebrew names, which are transliterated into English, have significant meanings. Naphtali in the name of Dan, a troop. Gad means a troop. The daughter will call me blessed. That means, that's what Hebrew name Asher means, call me blessed. So you have your scorecard of all those children. And it came to pass when Rachel had borne Joseph that Jacob said unto Laban, send me away that I may go into mine own place and to my country. Give me my wives and my children for whom I have served, thee, and let me go. For thou knowest my service. I guess his 14 years are done. 14 years of service. And Laban said unto him, I pray thee, if I have found favor in thine eyes, tarry, stay. I don't want you to leave. But Jacob persists and leaves. And of course, there's a long involved this distribution of their shared wealth and how God blesses Jacob, and he departs. The third focus here, and I want to spend most of my time here, is when Jacob is returning, Genesis 32, verse number 27, and Jacob wrestles with God. This is very familiar to us. He's back at returning back to his home, and he has this encounter with what is most likely a theophany, an Old Testament appearance of God in angelic form or in human form, and they wrestle, and their exchange is about this question. Jacob wants to know who this is with whom he wrestles, and God basically says to Jacob, what is your name? Now, I think there's reason to pause there, because I think that is maybe the pivotal question about Jacob. Who are you? Jacob's name means trickster or cheater, manipulator. He's always been pretending to be somebody else. He thought he could get the blessing and the birthright by pretense and by cheating. And I'm sure there are times when Jacob didn't really know who he was. The problem with sin is not just that it deceives other people, but sin deceives us. When our soul and spirit are at enmity with God, our personal identity disintegrates. I'm not trying to be psychological here. I'm not trying to be overly dramatic. But when you lose your image of God, when you're as an image bearer of God, when you when that fractures, and that's what happened when Adam fell. The image of God was broken. Still there. You could still see it. It was like a mirror cracked. You could still see reflections of God's image, but it was not the image that God had bestowed upon Adam when he was upright and in the garden before he sinned. And our identity, our self-awareness, why we exist and what we are, is linked to God's image in us. God is not just enslaving us and taking advantage of us and making us work for Him. We were created for the purpose of bearing God's image. That's why we exist. God said, let us make man in our image. We are image bearers of God. The first thing you say, I don't know what I'm here for. I don't know why I'm alive. I don't know all these complications of this world. Why do I exist? You exist to be an image bearer of God. To be a reflection of God's glory, a reflection of God's Trinity, your body, soul, and spirit, and a reflection of God's abilities. We are not God, but we are a reflection of that. We have the human mind, the human being that you are marvelously gifted. You have an amazing abilities. Whatever technology you can admire, a human mind conceived of that. Say, well, I don't really understand some of these complexities of aerodynamics or computer architecture. Just realize this. A human mind formulated that. Thought that up. And human beings can be gifted academically, they can be gifted athletically, they can be gifted artistically, they can be gifted in relationships. Sometimes we don't think of relationship people as important as athletes and artists and academics, but really think about this. People who are gifted with getting along or ministering to people, how valuable are they? I'll give you an illustration. What about a mother? Now, she might be very gifted academically, she might be very athletic, she might be very artistic, but can you put a value on a mother's ability to love her children, the relationship, the bond between a mother and a child? How can you explain that? A mother's ability, Paul admires that so much that when he's talking to one of his church letters, he said, I wanted to minister to you like a mother would minister to her children. If you've ever seen, sometimes it's in fun, but if you've ever seen a description of a mother's job description, what a mother actually does, what a good, a godly mother, what a Proverbs 31 mother aspires to do, those kind of relationships are amazing. The relationships that friends can have, the ministry that individuals can have one to another, we probably don't rank those up there with academic, athletic, artistic gifts, but you know, the person who can care for others. You think of nurses or therapists or someone who has the patience to teach, teach special education children, for example. It takes some patience, it takes some skill to teach anybody. But if you've ever watched a teacher invest themselves in a special needs child, it takes extraordinary patience. It takes tremendous love. What is that a picture of? Well, that's a picture of God. God is like that. God is infinitely patient with us, long-suffering. He is our teacher. So, my point is, when Jacob has this encounter, Jacob is suffering. I'm sure the psychiatrist could have a field day with Jacob, because who is Jacob? Is he the firstborn? No, he's not really the firstborn, but he's got the blessing and the birthright. And is he Leah's husband? Well, yes, sort of, but he's also Rachel's husband. He's sort of Bilhah's husband, and also the other one. And I don't know how much disintegration there was in Jacob's life. I think Jacob's return home was a cry for help too. It's like, I want to go home. I don't really know who I am. I don't really feel at home here. He wants to go home. Eve wants to go home even because he knows there's some danger in going home, because Esau's still there. As far as Jacob knows, that's not a good relationship. And Jacob's having an identity crisis. When he went to his father, clothed in the costume, Esau said, what's your name? You know what Jacob said? My name's Esau. His name wasn't Esau, but he lied. And he had, your voice doesn't sound like, oh, I got a cold, I'm Esau. And now God asked him, what's your name? And Jacob, one of those brief epiphanies. Jacob doesn't have a lie, doesn't have a sob story, doesn't have an tale to tale. He just says, my name's Jacob. That's who I am. And he said, thy name shall be called no more Jacob, but Israel. I'm going to change your name from trickster or literally heel grabber, because he grabbed Esau's heel and they named him Jacob. Now that name doesn't have negative connotations now. Jacob or James, the New Testament equivalent, it's a very noble name. But in the Old Testament, Jacob would have been insulting to be called a trickster or a con man. And God says, I'm changing your name. Not going to be Jacob anymore. I'm going to name you Israel, a prince of God. El, the suffix El means God. And Israel, Jacob becomes Israel. This is very significant because from here forward, Jacob's family will be called the children of Israel. When you go over to the book of Exodus, the whole nation will be called the children of Israel. Not because they're young, but just because they are the descendants, the heirs of Jacob. So when the Old Testament talks about the covenant with this Hebrew nation, it's always Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Those are the three stepping stones of Abraham has Isaac, and then Isaac has Jacob, and the covenant relationship between God and this nation, Abraham's family becomes a nation. Actually, Abraham's family becomes several nations, but this nation is the nation of Israel, and they are the children of this Jacob. They're not the children of Esau. They're the children of Jacob. And God makes him a prince. This name Israel will be very significant in the Bible because it will refer to the person of Israel. It will refer to the nation of Israel. It will refer to the spiritual family of God. There's a sense in which the New Testament calls every believer, Galatians says, spiritual Israel. Now, we are not political Israel or national Israel, but when you're saved, you become a member of the kingdom of spiritual Israel. So, this name is very important. It's very significant. This is a big event. This is a watershed event in the Old Testament. Jacob becomes Israel. And the story, the history of the people of God in the Old Testament, even in Jesus' day, Jesus' lineage is traced through Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, ostensibly through Judah. Both Matthew and Luke will trace the lineage of Christ through David, back to David, and then back to Abraham in Matthew, and then back to God in the creation of Adam in the book of Luke. But it will be through this person, this man named Jacob. The artist included some teraphims. These are idols that would have been typical of the neighbors of Israel personally, and that his wives would have had in their possessions. All right. Take time for some questions here. I'm sure this is a reference to Leah and Rachel, but as I thought more about the first question, it may also have been the problem that Rebecca and Jacob had in misunderstanding how God was going to fulfill the promise of the blessing and the birthright going to the younger. Maybe. What are some of the bad consequences of envy? Something bad happens when you're envious. For one thing, it blinds you to your own blessings. You look too hard at others. maybe some good thing they have or some good thing you think they have, it blinds you to your own blessings. It's very hard to be thankful. It's impossible, I would say, to be thankful for your own blessings and be envious of others. So, ingratitude, which the Bible says is a very serious sin because it's really the domino of ingratitude leads to a breach between you and God because God made you and God gives you what you have. And envy sort of second guesses God, says, God messed this up. He gave this good thing to him. I should have that. I want that. I need that. So it mars our relationship with God. What's another bad consequence that happens with envy? It doesn't just mar our relationship with God, but what else? How does it affect your relationship with others? The people that you envy, they tend to be your close friends and tend to be a blessing to them. No, usually you find a way to make them the enemy. Usually our Adamic sin nature conspires to undermine them and to wish them ill. We don't pray for them to prosper. If they do prosper, it only makes us more envious. So envy mars our relationship with God, but it also mars our relationship with others. Envy really is a form of doubt when you think about it. If you look at something, you think, that's a really great thing he has there. I guess if God wants me to have that, God will give me that. Or God will help me earn the money to get that. And this is a thin line sometimes, but you could see something and say, you know, I think I'd like to have a vehicle like that. I think I could use a truck like that. I think I could use I could enjoy a house like that. I think if God wants me to have it, I'm going to work. And you could admire something somebody else has and then say, well, I'll just have to trust the Lord. Now, I don't think trusting the Lord means you sit around and do nothing. God bless you with talents. God bless you with abilities. God gives you a work to do. Well, then work and earn. And then God gives us richly all things to enjoy. And if you go buy that car, or you go buy that house, there's no problem there. That's a blessing of God. But envy short circuits that. It distrusts God. God's cheating me. Why would God give him that car and give her that house? And I need it. So God's failed me. That envy is really doubt. Doubting God. Now, I was trying to run out of time before I got to question two, but I'm going to go ahead and ask it. I have no idea how to answer this. Because I misread it. When I was reading through it, I went through clipping through the answers. I thought it said why. Why did they prompt Joseph the father? It says who. I know the answer to who. That was well, the wives, Leah and Rachel. Satan. Yeah, he's the father of all sin. Leah, I think the Hebrew I've read means weak eyes. The picture is usually that Rachel is the beauty and Leah was not. But then I thought about that question. Why did Rachel prompt Jacob? Of course, I know Leah retaliates. But why did they do that? It's envy. Leah's blessed with children. Rachel doesn't have children. And instead of waiting on God to bless her with children, or to not bless her with children, whatever God's plan is, they concoct this wicked scheme. Again, the Bible doesn't doesn't pull the shades here. It tells us about their wickedness and the fact that they were sinners and what came of it. Why did Jacob consider his home to be in Canaan and not Paddan Aram? Well, he's the heir of Abraham and Isaac, and the promised land as the home is going to be Canaan. I know the promise is bigger, but Canaan will always be the homeland for the people of Israel. When they return from captivity in Egypt to take possession, they will not take possession of the Euphrates Valley. They will first take possession of the Jordan Valley. They will take possession of what we know of as the Promised Land from Mount Hermon down to the Dead Sea, the Sea of Galilee down the Jordan Valley. Any other reasons Jacob would have considered his home to be in Canaan? I can think of a pretty simple one. Where was he born? Was he born in Paddan Aram or in Canaan?
Canaan.
The birthplace sometimes has a powerful pull upon us. You don't fill out any paperwork now. They still ask for your place of birth, don't they? I'm not sure what that significance is, other than what you're born in the United States, but they still ask what city and state where you were born, don't they? Is it on your driver's license? Or no. Or is that your address? But your birthplace is significant. What's implied in the change of name that the angel gave to Jacob? I spent some time on this. What's the difference between the name Jacob and the name Israel? Jacob emphasizes his depravity, and Israel emphasizes his relationship with God. Jacob sort of sums up everything that's wrong with this man. He lives down to his name. Just because somebody names you Jacob doesn't mean you have to be a trickster, a cheat, a con man. But Jacob lived down to his name. God changed his name to Israel. And he never made another mistake after that. No. Jacob goes right on bumping along. Good days, bad days, trusting God, not trusting God, praising God, cursing God. Now, I hope we may not have the highs and lows of Jacob, but he reminds me of us. We are princes of God. The Bible says, Revelation says we are kings and priests, and yet we are also still vulnerable to envy and strife and manipulating things and trying to make things work out instead of trusting God. Great lesson in the name change of Jacob to Israel. All right, let's bow. Be dismissed. Brian, may you dismiss us, please.
Father, it's good to be in your house this morning. Thank you for the message you heard from your word. Ask you to help us to keep our eyes on you so we won't fall envy and these other sins that we've learned about this morning. We ask that you be with the folks who are struggling with COVID and other illnesses. We ask you to be with the blessings throughout the building. Just for us to fail you and Christ in our prayer, you know.